Ice spread a song so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today are two returning guests who may or may not be doing a crossover thing with this. I don't know yet. It's Stephen Rubes and Mary Williams, everyone. Woo!
Hello!
Hello!
Hi, John! They are the hosts of From the Top.
I know we should
have... Theme song, yeah!
Steven, change our theme song to just be that. I just need John going, theme song,
That's, and that's the end of my theme song.
What is yours? Okay, wait, because we haven't listened to your... Life is but a song, so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah. Love it. You know
I
what?
Love that we made a live rendition. That was beautiful.
I may not just put the theme song. We'll see how I feel in a minute.
Love it. Okay. Life is but a song, so we can sing along.
Exactly, yes.
Damn, I didn't realize that we were all just like whipping out pipes tonight, folks. I'm doing the wrong vocal warm-ups.
What? Whipping out pipes?
Anyway, we're here today to talk about Stranger Things, a musical parody. So the recording of it was in 2023. I believe it premiered in 2022 or 2021. No, 22. It was 22, of course.
I mean, they did like a weird little 54 like a, below pseudo concert in 2021 that gave it
Got them the producers and everything like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the book, music, and lyrics are by Jonathan Hoag. It was directed by Nick Flatto. And according to IMDb, yes, there is an IMDb page for this. I'm so excited. there's literally nothing besides the summary and the cast. So according to IMDb, take a trip back to Hawkins, Indiana, 1983, when times were simpler, hair was bigger, and unsupervised children were getting snatched by interdimensional creatures. A hilarious upside-down take on the hit Netflix series. So, my first question is, you've seen Stranger Things, yes?
Oh, of course.
Okay, great. Now, have you seen Stranger Things prior to this?
No.
Okay. So because I live in New York, there was an opportunity that I saw the show live.
I actually saw it. I love that.
So my friend and I got tickets, and we were originally going to be seated around, like in the chairs that are around. Mm-hmm. But when we were there, ushers were like, who wants to sit in the beanbag chairs? And so my friend and I were like, fuck yeah, we will.
Absolutely.
It's actually Lauren Gismondi, bestie of the pod and my best friend in real life. So
Yay!
We got to sit in the beanbag chairs, but like, that was it. There wasn't any, we were thinking, and as you see in the show, there's maybe like one or two times that they interact with some people in the beanbag chairs.
Okay.
But we were thinking it was going to be more, but it was still fun to sit there in a beanbag chair for 2 hours.
The comfiest seats that you'll find in New York.
I mean, it was like you were right up in that Demogorgon's crotch.
We were up in their business, yes. The ice cream, I want to say Chips Ahoy, but that's not right. Spoofs Ahoy, was yes. like right in front of us too. We got to see, I mean, in this basement, the church basement, as they call out in the show, there really is no bad seat in the house.
Well, right? it's literally the perfect sort of theater in the round moment.
Yes. Yeah, and we've all, I'm assuming you've seen shows similar to this where you're in a round or, you know, not a theater space that they turn into
Mary
a theater space.
And I met doing a theater in the round situation with Spring Awakening. So,
oh,
yes, fully.
The Spring Awakening backstory saga
continues.
I mean, truly, it was bonkers because it wasn't fully in the round. We had people on stage with us, and then we had people in the house.
Yeah.
So it was like you were playing in an alley style. So like you still had to like play to both sides, but they're literally like it was my first time actually doing anything in the round. So I applaud any actor who can actually like successfully work in the round, because I am so always like proscenium and thrust, like that is my experience. So then to remember that there are people staring at my ass, I'm like, oh, I gotta turn around and make sure these people can hear what I'm saying.
But it also, you're not wild. Just staring at my ass the whole time.
I mean, it's a gorgeous view, but like you can't hear what I'm saying, so I'm just
right.
You know, what's the point of that? So but yes, that is the origins of where Steven and I forged our friendship.
I would say they did so well in this setting, but how was it like sitting in that room live for you?
Oh my god, we were cackling the whole, like,
cute.
I was cackling watching this because it's just so funny, and like you know, nothing is different really from what I remember seeing it it's the same like show. They didn't like update anything. I honestly don't remember all of like the season 4 references from it.
Sure.
Because it was just so
of the billion things they threw at you, how the hell are you going to remember the little snippets from season 4?
Yeah. I mean, because season 4 just happened when we saw it. Because I think we went October 2022 to see it, if I remember correctly.
Fun. Gotcha.
It wasn't last year. And so season 4 happened in the summer. And so like the running up the hill moment that they have in there, I was like, huh. And then they mentioned something else. Oh, like questioning Will's sexuality.
The entire show.
Yes. I mean, I appreciated the fact that they like finally kind of in a beautiful way alluded to the fact that not only is he questioning his sexuality, but that he also like is crushing hard on his best friend.
Of course.
And like, how do you work through that? So then to translate that onto the stage,
with
we just turn it into a fisting joke. We have decided that puppet equals gay.
Puppet
so
is gay is puppet.
Puppet is gay. Gay is puppet.
Gay is puppet. I found the quotes already. Yeah, and then I also remember prior to seeing the show, their ads. Well, their like Instagram stories or videos or reels or whatever, where it was, her name is Caroline Huerta, who played Joyce. And she was running all over New York just shouting, Will! Where's Will?
Oh
my god,
that.
Cute.
Oh,
in the Joyce
no.
costume and everything.
Yes.
It was, I was sold the second I saw that, and I was
cute.
Have to see this show. And then we did. And then luckily Broadway HD, not sponsored, but please sponsor me.
Absolutely.
Oh my god, please sponsor John. Do it.
And sponsor from the top. They do more film stage productions than I do. So sponsor them, Broadway HD. But to go back to the round, I feel like filming it, they didn't really have a plan.
Yeah,
there are things that you're like, okay, guys, like, why are we seeing her ass?
Yeah.
And she's talking.
They set up like 7 cameras and said, have fun with that little switch.
And they didn't adjust the audio either, it sounds like.
No, well, so my husband, of course, the Phantom of the Pod, watched this with me, and like there were only like 3 camera angles that were properly calibrated for the lighting situation and had like the correct ISO and like all of the things to really make it like a crispy image. And then there were 3 other cameras where you had people operating them, and then they were like, I did, which is why like it kind of stuttered and did things. But of course, Tyler is just like, I mean, I get it, because we've done camera setups before where not every camera has the same lens on it, and different lenses have different different settings and like you're not gonna get it like as close as you want it to be. But like, yeah, absolutely. It's the reason I advocate that if you're gonna film something, get your film crew in there the night before, watch the rehearsal so you know what you're filming, so you don't just get ass. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm all about an ass shot, but it has to be because you meant it.
The right ass shot.
Yes, and not because you just didn't know what you were doing. So anyway,
one of the things though I do love about the show is that not only is it parodying Stranger Things, but like it's doing the Forbidden Broadway, the other off-Broadway musical where they're making fun of Broadway shows, and there is a ton of them in this show.
Papa, can you hear me?
What musical didn't they reference? Never Have I Ever. What in the gay hell? Like, oh my God.
I don't remember hearing a Phantom reference. Did they do that?
I
feel like that's the one.
If they didn't, that's a
missed opportunity. Because like when we went to Barb's turn, the song. First of all, hashtag justice for Barb. We're
justice for Barb.
That. Yes. And the show took that and was like, you're welcome, everyone. We're going to give her the 11 o'clock number.
Yes.
That is part World Burn, part Rose's Turn from Gypsy with a dash of, there's one line that is for good from Wicked. And those are the only ones I could clock. I'm pretty sure there's more song alone.
I tried starting to be like, okay, what musicals are they referencing? Like when and where and how many?
Nope.
And I lost count. There's not a way to quantify how many times they reference something else. And I don't know. There is a part of me that is like, I love it. Don't get me wrong. Love it. Clearly. But I'm also like, it was a lot. It was so
teetering the line of too much.
So much. But I wouldn't edit it out. It was just a lot.
But also, they're doing a lot of 80s pop culture references.
To boot. Yeah.
But that I feel like was on par with the show.
Correct.
With the TV show.
Yeah. So I would have leaned more into the 80s campy references like they were doing, like what was it, the
Breakfast Club E.T.
Breakfast Club moment was amazing, E.T. moment amazing, and then they were like, oh, you're giving me George Michaels. He's like, yeah, you wanna wanna see my Wham stick or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, wake me up before you go. Like, it was just funny moments like that that I go, oh, that's on par.
And then
I'm the gatekeeper.
You're the key master from Ghostbusters.
I'm like, perfect. Absolutely perfect. But yeah, so I would have liked maybe to focus it in more in this 80s realm and those funny things and then pander into this musical thing. But since they're already making it a parody musical, I think they're just making fun that it's a musical and taking things that we can automatically reference and know, so we're almost more comfortable with it in this setting, I think, is what they were doing.
Yeah. And then there was where was I gonna go with this? I had and then there was another reference that I'm not sure they were actually referencing, but the two of you should have picked up on it. Ooh. If you did, it's Papa being like Lucius Malfoy in the Star Kid Potter series.
Hell yeah.
Oh, 1,000%.
We did. I was like, why?
Yeah.
John, why did you do this?
I didn't. I honestly forgot.
Well, so the Phantom of the Pod actually asked me, because when he was watching it with me, he goes, wait a minute. Are these the guys that is this Star Kid?
Yeah.
I was like,
literally,
no, I
thought
know
it
you
was reaped from that show.
Yeah. I was like, I know you want it to be, but like, Yeah, that was a Malfoy mullet. I mean, that guy literally was just like, I'm like,
and then doing
why?
The jetés and everything.
Jetés, Jesus, uh-huh. I'm like, what? I mean, if Papa was as cool as this guy was, like in the stage show, in the actual Netflix show, I would have actually kind of been okay with him. I would have been like, yeah, okay, that's neat.
You're a villain, but you're dancing everywhere. Love it.
It's fine.
We're fine. Everything is fine.
Hashtag Malfoy mullet. That thing was ridiculous. Ugh. Silly.
Jeez. I don't even know.
I killed John. I killed him.
I'm back. Don't worry. I'm back. I'm back. I'm alive.
I love it. The caricatures of these people, though, all of them dug so deep into who these characters were, the tropes of what they were, and then took it to the 11. Like, haha, 11. But I know. But it truly was so. I my mind was blown half the time going, I hate this, but I love it.
I was just laughing and saying, I love this. And I love it.
Yeah.
Can I just say that I made that joke to Steven when he said, turn it up to 11. And I was like, oh, 11. Ha ha. He says to me, Mary, I hate you. And so then now we're just repeating the cycle.
That thing. I was like, oh, yeah. I had actually forgot you did that. So,
It's just, but I just think it's funny because like it's we all know what the joke is, but it just comes in stages.
Love it.
But which, like, I'm surprised they didn't make a Spinal Tap joke during.
I know.
Yeah. They could have.
Missed opportunity. Yeah.
Well, so if there's ever a revival out there, or if Jonathan Hoag is listening, I hope you're listening.
I hope so.
We love the show. It was great. Bring it back.
This show was bonkers because, like, not having watched Stranger Things in a minute, like, I was able to still identify, a lot of the Easter eggs from the show, which was really cool. And I think that was the neatest part about this for me, even though, like, it's really hard for me to watch parodies because, like, StarKid was, like, its very specific thing because we already knew it was, like, going to be camptastic. But, like, watching this, I was like, I don't know what the level of camp is going to be. And even though it was still, like, very self-aware and self-referential and, like, all these things, you could still, like, see very clearly that the writer, the director, the actors, they all had a very deep love of this material, or at least they knew it so well that they were able to make a parody of it and still kind of make a, like, to honor the source material that this comes from. And I think that that's just, like, that's what made it so watchable for me, was because of that reverence, you know? I don't know if that's, like, going too deep for that, for a parody musical, but, like, I don't know. I just thought that was cool.
No, because, like, I like that act one was basically season one, and then act two continuing the story, but they're pulling references from the other three seasons. Granted, there's some of that in the first act as well, but primarily it's season one. And then act two, like, it starts with a season three reference, and they introduce Erica, who was always in the show but really had a bigger part in season three, which, by the way, Erica would be voguing. I'm going to just say that right now.
I mean, come on.
Come on. Steven, I have a very specific question for you. Mary, you're free to answer, but Steven, during the final battle, the song where 11 has the dance battle with the Demigorgon, what kind of choreography would you do? Would you do what they did, or would you go even sillier, or would you go more serious?
Okay. I actually have a note on this. And you clocked this.
Of course you do.
I knew it because it was the big dance number. So I was need to talk to Steven about this.
And yet it wasn't.
Oh. All right, babe. Shots fired. Now let's go.
Jonathan Hoag, you can mute it now.
You can just skip ahead.
But here's the thing. I actually give amazing, beautiful props to this choreographer, Ashley, Martinelli?
Martinelli. Yeah. Good God, Miriam. Anyway, sorry.
Marinelli.
See,
but yeah, yes. She did so perfect. Like, choreographing parody or something larger than life is already hard enough. That said, this end fight battle was less than everything we'd already seen, like, up to this point. Like, you're giving us these huge moments. We just had Barb's turn. We have this funny, amazing, huge choreographed moment of running up that hill, which is really fun. Yeah. And then you see this big moment of them trying to crawl up into the ceiling through the hole. And then this dance battle, ultimately just an anticlimactic letdown for me. And, like, the people trying to do pirouettes couldn't pirouette. And I'm like,
was that the joke, though, that they're not dancers?
I don't know. The thing is, based on everything we had seen thus far, I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, to make it bigger than anything else and make it an actual climax. I would have needed, like, live fireworks blowing up in that basement. Like, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, I'm saying, like, it is a parody, and sort of, like, what you're saying is maybe they're making fun of that. Maybe it's like, oh, yeah, this is, of course this is stupid. They wouldn't be doing anything. So what can I expect from this fucking thing? Like, I don't know, you know?
Love you so much.
The song itself sounds like This Is the End from, oh, fuck, what's the name of that movie? The Saturday Night Fever sequel, kind of. Staying Alive.
Yes.
So if you listen to that song, you'll be like, yes, I understand the reference you're making, which is yet another 80s reference, I guess they were trying to go for. But I was just like, this is funny. And the
funny. Yeah. Absolutely.
I was just intrigued to hear if you were the choreographer for a production of this. Where would you go?
I would have absolutely. I don't, like, the only thing in my mind is it either has to be completely different than anything else that we've seen thus far to make it so different. Like, it would have either had to be blackout with, like, down spots, or, like, a completely red room and, like, just them alone, or it would have had to have been more pandemonium than it already was. Like, I don't know, but I personally wasn't enamored with what was given in that moment. Am I saying it's wrong? No, I'm just saying wasn't what I would have done.
No, because they needed,
they
needed to Deus Ex Machina in a way, the Demigorgon, because that's not important to this story, really.
Yeah,
like, yes, he's the Demigorgon is a funny bit where they do the knockoff Thriller, where you know, Barb's turn and. Jeez, she's dating the Demigorgon.
I love it.
Oh my
so hard.
God, I just, oh God, it's so good.
But yeah, but like the I think they were betting on this vest mechanism for the thing to pop out of his chest to be bigger than it was.
Mm. And to be the alien reference, yeah?
Yeah, correct. And I it didn't read as well. And if you weren't facing that side of the stage, you probably didn't even get to see it. So, like, half the audience didn't get to see some big thing. So right. I'm like, I think it needed something not different, just different, you know?
Yeah. Not different, but different. But different. You know? I just adore the bejesus out of you. God. Sorry. I love that you were like, Mary, feel free to answer. I'm glad that I didn't, because, like, John and I do similar things where when it comes to, like, choreography specific things, I'm like, Steven. Hi, I have a question. I'm gonna need you to answer that, because, like, my
dance monkey
only...
dance
monkey,
absolutely,
Patricia. I mean, come on. It's just Steven is my Patricia. No, I am Steven's Patricia. Yeah, because I'm a little late on the count.
You are a little late on the count, sweetie.
Oh shit! I didn't need you to actually say it and make it real. Okay. Now I have my anxiety just kicking in. I haven't even danced in years, so it's like nope.
Clap 4 haunts her dreams until the day she will die.
One, two, no, no, I can't clap on four. Yeah. I always clapped on three and not four.
Yeah.
There's anyway. Also another musical reference that I'm not sure they also realized that they made.
Realized it was.
Yeah, so in the song Forever, that reminded me of a musical called Theory of Relativity. Has anyone heard of this show?
Yeah, I have not. Where is that from?
So it's I did it at Stage Door Manor once. It's very vignette-y, where it's a lot of like solo and duet songs that do go together, but you have to find the through line. And in it, there's a song called The End of the Line, which is about two girls who were best friends forever. One mm-hmm. was bigger than the other. And then when they went to college, the one that was bigger slimmed down and the other one got fatter, basically. And sure. So watching this, I was like, huh, I know that the ending is not the same, but it kind of reminded me of that vibe where it's like two best friends, but they're not really best friends. Because when you think about the show, yes, Nancy, the TV show, Nancy uh-huh. does like look for Barb, and she's a little more concerned for Barb throughout season one.
Yes.
But like, it's not as important as Will. And so that's where I think they were, the Stranger Things people were jumping, Stranger Things people were jumping off from, saying that, oh, she doesn't care because Will is more important, because more people are more affected by Will and not Barb, which is unfortunate because hashtag justice for Barb.
Hashtag justice for yes. Barb.
Oh, Barb got her justice. Barb She's got... swimming in she justice. Did.
Literally.
She is literally bukkakeed in justice.
Wow.
Okay, I guess
babe.
That's another quote right there.
Sorry.
No, you're not.
I'm not. I'm really not. You're I love really coming on not. John's show because I finally get to be like,
bukkakeed.
We can say it on our show. I just feel we like can. Steven would edit it out.
I just bleep it and it's fine. Because I feel like 14-year-olds listen to us and I'm like, I'm not going to subject them to that shit.
Oh, whatever.
Wow.
Just put the little E sign there, you know.
It's true. It's true.
It's fine.
But so speaking of songs, what did we think of like the music itself? Obviously, we're here to talk about music. Musicals.
So
I know you have thoughts on this. Yes,
I do. And so my one big kind of overarching thought of this is the music all felt like one tone for me. So like all of the songs had very similar feeling. So I couldn't really identify standout songs and I couldn't identify things that I would cut. It all just had this very similar tone. But the only one that I can really the first one, Welcome to Hawkins. Like, I mean, it's a great opening number. It's a great, gives us exposition and like does all the happy peppy things. Those were not words. They were happy peppy things. That is my one and only note of this. The music is good, but it is not great.
Okay. What about you, Steven? You had thoughts.
Yeah, I have to agree, just in that like they all feel like they're a 10 and they're all a ballad and they're all like I want songs
and belting.
Yes, they're all this like carousel of I'm trying to fuck you songs. And I don't like there's
I'm gonna need
this...
you to elaborate on that. I'm trying to fuck you. There's only one song that is like that, really. There,
well, I feel
interpretive
like
sex ballet.
Interpretive sex ballet. And I don't know. I just feel like no matter what, well, it's almost like the scenes in between and like why they're singing this. So like we have In These Woods.
Which is a Princess Di reference, by the way.
Right.
I'm glad you guys picked. This is why I love talking to the both of you, because you'll find these things and I go, oh, that was a thing? Neat.
Yeah. It's a line. It's a line in the song.
I know.
And then we have Nice, which is literally the two guys singing about trying to get with girls. And then we have Barb's Turn, which is also her like
the 11 o'clock
sexcapade
yeah.
with, sex. You know, the Demogorgon. And then, I mean, oh, what's the other one? Stranger. And then, what was the...
Well, if you think about it, though...
Like, I mean, they're all just like, oh, I'm a horny teenager.
But, like, isn't... But that's also in the TV show.
That is the show.
I think that's
correct.
What they're... Yeah.
It's not wrong. It's just wrong.
You just want a different emotion.
But do I want it? No, because each song is perfectly placed where it should be and giving what it should be giving, but it's like, hot damn, chill out.
I was gonna say
on iTunes, which is where I got the actual list of this, they put nice after Where There's a Will, and I was just like,
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where There's a Will blows my mind, because I don't know how they did that song and not get sued by Disney.
Oh, Rainbow Connection?
Yeah.
How? Absolutely how?
Well, I wonder, with something like that, is Rainbow Connection old enough that it would technically be in the public domain, or because Disney has it, like...
It's not that old.
It's not that old. It's from the 70s.
The thing is, because we know that I forget which show we covered that we uncovered this, because of Saturday Night Live, there is law that says when you do parody, nothing is off limits. If it is substantiated in parody, and parody is part of this title... Technically, you can make fun of it as long as you don't break copyright law. So every six notes, as long as the next note is different, you can technically restart.
That's it. Yeah, because that's the same thing Weird Al does. Weird Al Yankovic. Yes. And he goes one step further and actually reaches out to the artist that he's about to parody. Yes. Do I get your blessing for this?
Absolutely. If you don't want to be parodied by Weird Al, you have bigger issues.
Yeah.
You're doing your life wrong.
But still, like, Where There's a Will, I was just like, this is so smart.
Yeah.
Because it's Rainbow Connection. Obviously, Will knows he's a puppet. Everyone knows Will's a puppet, because Will is a puppet for the show. The end. How smart is that?
Let's make connections. Yep.
But then, like, you know, they alter the banjo enough. I think they actually even take it up a few steps.
Mm-hmm.
They change the key entirely. So that's how they got away. That's really how they got away with it. But also, how did they get away with this?
But honestly, though.
Because, like, legally, I'm sure, I feel like the Disney lawyers are just waiting in a closet somewhere just to attack somebody for copyright.
Bet.
Absolutely.
Oh God!
There's one other song I do really want to talk about, and that is Crazy.
Oh God!
The Winona Ryder meltdown.
Oh. Yes. Which I was just like, it's fascinating that they picked these movies. Granted, they're probably, well, Little Women was in the 90s.
So I figured this out. I think it's Age of Innocence.
Uh huh.
Okay.
As opposed to Little Women. Because initially I thought Little Women, and then I went, no, this is Age of Innocence. Because of what they're referencing, and like, they're making fun of me because we can't afford limes for scurvy. And I was like, I think that's it. So.
Oh, fun sorry. Fact. Okay. So is Age of Innocence an 80s movie?
She's young.
It is 93.
Oh.
So, but.
Was Little Women 80s?
Because
I thought that was 90s as well. Maybe they just needed another Winona.
I mean, because let's be real, like I do find it very fascinating. When I told Steven this too, my husband was the first one to clock the Heathers reference, and I was like, because of course I, you know, was like, oh shit, why is Beetlejuice here? And immediately I'm reinvested. I'm like, oh, hello. Why are you here? And Tyler's like, what, did you not notice Heather Chandler used her full name? And I said, sir, who are you right
and
now?
And then you and he's fell like, in love with him even harder in that
all
moment.
Over again.
Sure did. Sure did. Sure did. But I thought it was really cute to use all of these different, like, to kind of, like, not only to pay homage to Winona as an actor, but, like, to kind of reinforce the fever dream aspect of Joyce, what she's going through mentally losing Will, and, like, trying to convince people that she can talk to him through Christmas lights and an alphabet on the walls. Like, it sounds ridiculous, right?
Because her character for all four seasons really is on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Every time. I think I brought it up that, like, I can't stand watching her in the physical series because it's like, I'm like, girl, what are you doing?
She's a mom. Like, her son is lost.
I'm like, this is not acting. This is just something.
Oh, Winona, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then we all saw the video of her at the Emmys when she was high on something, going,
I was like, Stephen, are you about to be Patti LuPone and call out Madonna? Like, is that what's happening right now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
But we're not going to talk about that spider season of American Horror Story where Kim was one note the entire fucking time. But it's fine.
Gross. But, like, okay, you guys had very strong opinions, though, about the music. But do you feel like Jonathan Hoag, like, really paid respect and then took it up a level and did the work and all that?
He did his job, and he did it so well.
I'm surprised it was just one person doing everything. Yeah. Which, I mean, I guess it's good and bad, because it's good, so it's one person who knows the tone that he wants to set throughout. But it's bad.
Unchecked.
It's unchecked, and also you're going to lose your fucking mind.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're just like, I have to write yet another song.
Well, I think the thing where they succeeded in this, in my humble and asked for opinion, because John just asked me what I thought of it. The fact that you could kind of fall into the pit of wanting to write music and keep writing songs and just go, like, you know, I mean, I can't remember how many songs are in, like, you know, a Harry Potter musical, but, like, you could have a song every 3 minutes if you wanted to. But the fact that, like, this track list is 14 songs long, it's a perfect amount of music to get your point across, to be able to really still continue to drive the story. It didn't ever feel like there was, gratuitous music just to have music. Like, there was always music that had a purpose. And, like, it really did kind of, it's what kept me invested in the show. So in that regard, they did very well, because, like, Jonathan was able to take four seasons of a show that is just larger than life. It's huge. And to condense it down into 2 hours with a 15-minute intermission, I mean, bravo for you for doing that in the first place. But, like, to then also be able to get songs that still made the story flow, still gave characters what they needed. That is my only gripe, is that it sounds like one note, but, like, all of the positives are still here. So, like, in that regard, the music is, I mean, phenomenal. I can't fucking write music. So good for you for writing 14 but, songs that actually made me want to watch this.
But also the lyrics and the book.
Well,
so
of course,
he wrote
the things. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just the one writer doing it all, which, yes, I agree with you, Stephen. It goes unchecked, because, like, this is the rarity for me that I don't think jokes went too far or
too long. I always bring this up on your show, so I hope people don't think this is a constant of mine. I will say, with an inside joke, we talk at length about inside jokes and if they play a role in these sorts of shows. And when inside jokes are done and kept in a show, it's really self-serving, and I can clock that from 70 miles away, and I will judge it harshly for it. And this show, while in parody, gets to that point where it's about to cross that parodical line.
That's a word.
And then it backs up. It like toys with you the entire time. It's about to push it too far, about to take it to, you know, a little too much, and then it pulls it back. And I'm like, oh, it keeps edging me just in the right way.
But also it doesn't go into the inside joke of it. The inside jokes are really inside jokes for theater people with all the references they make. But it's not like the first Potter musical that we did where there's inside jokes from that cast.
And I think that's the difference between college kids and like professionals.
Right.
You know, they understand like, oh, we're out of that. This is now all about the box office and making money.
Yeah. And like, you know, I bought my magnet from it. And so it got my, God, I don't know where else to go with this. Do you guys have any other?
I've got quotes from my husband when he was watching it.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Besides him calling you out for not knowing Heather Chandler.
Yes, that. But I mean, there was a when they made the I might as well just, you know, bring it up because I will not do it justice if I try to paraphrase as I did when I told Steven about it. And he goes in my husband's voice, "Stop lying, you whore."
Wow.
It's a whole thing we'll tell you about later when the mics are off. But
is it along the lines of "Jane, you ignorant slut"? Or are you ignorant
much.
Whore?
Yeah, pretty much.
Whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, there, you know, like we have mentioned earlier, like there there are several great, you know, callbacks to 80s pop culture in this. But of course, when we hit our Xanadu reference, right? Words straight out of my husband's mouth. A Xanadu reference? Most 80s musical ever.
I was waiting wrong.
I mean, they were pretty much singing suddenly. Yeah. From Xanadu. They really were. It was amazing.
I wanted Carrie Butler on those roller skates to just come out and like make a cameo and then leave. Oh, I would have died.
Cheyenne Jackson just shows up in the shorts.
Absolutely.
Sir, don't throw Cheyenne.
I'm going to slide out of my chair.
Please don't.
Sorry, guys. Sorry, everyone. I'm so sorry.
Jesus.
Oh, yes, I'm hot now.
Oh, so.
Jennifer.
So what's fascinating too about this is like when it was playing, Gaten Matarazzo was on Broadway, and so I thought it'd be hilarious if they got him to play Dustin one night.
I wanted him to do it so bad.
That would have
like,
been awesome.
The guy, I want to give this person his dues. Hold on, let me find him. Jeremiah Garcia, who plays Dustin in this. I mean, everyone in the cast did a great
phenomenal
job.
All these performers dug in, and it was perfection. By the vocal talent in this show,
everyone is belting to the heavens, and then some.
So good.
It's so good. I could go through the list real quick because there's only eight of them in the cast. Jameer Brown as Lucas and the Demigorgon, phenomenal, great dancer. Steven, let's see you do a dance battle. Okay.
God damn.
That, Steven would not do a dance battle. He would just tackle this human being, and then it would be an NC-17 show, and we'd have to tell people to leave.
That gay-ass Demogorgon, man. That Demogorgon was hot. The teeth were doing something for me.
It was
swish,
so
swish,
fun.
Bitch. Take me to your upside hoedown. Like, hell yeah.
I don't know if you clocked it in the video, but he's wearing jazz shoes that are painted to look like the Demogorgon skin. So funny. Then we have
my heart.
Jeffrey Lofgren as Mike. I'm presuming this is how you pronounce these people's names. I'm so sorry if I'm not.
It's fine.
Where Mike, okay. Mike in the TV series is kind of a douchebag. He's a douchebag. And they don't really play into that in this, which I don't know I kind of like it because I feel like everyone's already maxed out.
You got into my head. I have a note. Mikey, sort of flat, but it coincides with my feelings of the series in that I find Mikey beige and nearly unwatchable because he's an asshole.
But also, we need a straight man. We yeah. need somebody to set up the jokes and everything. Yeah. Yes, he still has some funny moments as Mike and
sure
the other characters that he plays, but we need somebody grounded at least, because this is an insane asylum level of crazy going on. Then we have Garrett Poladin as Steve and Jonathan, which I think that is phenomenal. That was so smart to do that tracking.
So yeah. good. Ugh. Your hair. Is it flat? No, I was going to say flaccid. Such a good joke.
Then we have Harley Seeger as Eleven and Nancy, which, you know, I didn't clock that it was two different people when I watched it live. It was that good. I was like, wait, where's Nancy? What's going on here?
Can I tell you that the only reason I knew that it was the same actress is when Eleven comes out in her, like, surgical gown, I could see underneath and I could see, like, yeah. another costume. And then Nancy comes on in the next scene and I was like, oh, shit, there she is.
Well, so to go ahead with Slee playing Barb, mm-hmm. there's a moment when I saw it live during Barb's turn, I could see the rhinestones underneath. There was something shiny going on. And I was like, mm-hmm. there's a reveal.
We're getting a reveal.
Okay, but how beautiful that a reveal is just the same shirt, but with rhinestones.
Rhinestones and Barb written on the back. Amazing. I fucking love it. It's amazing. Hilarious. It's like when
I want this.
It's like when drag queens reveal from go from one wig to another that it's the same wig or in a different wig, color.
Yeah. Yes.
And then we get Sean W. Smith as Hopper, who
Sir. Oh, again, I'm in love with David Harbour, so the character of Hopper for me is just delightful. You got to move on from this topic because I'm just going to sit here and schvetz.
But I just wanted to at least give each of the actors their because like they're doing
absolutely
they're doing a lot, and like, you know,
quadruple duty.
Yeah, and the three of us work in theater. We've all done tech at some point theater. Yeah. And I was just like, I wonder what the tracking was like.
No with... backstage is chaos. It's gotta be.
Yeah, they gotta have like 17 baskets per person to throw different pieces in and then run around the theater to mm-hmm. place it somewhere else. Because clearly you enter one corner as Steve, enter another corner as Jonathan, exit a third corner as Jonathan, and go through a fourth corner as Steve again. And
so
you're
there's so many corners.
You as an audience member, how could you go pee in the middle of that show?
I personally didn't. I waited until intermission, and the line was so long that they took some of us to the green room.
No way,
where I saw the musicians and the swings, and I wasn't I'm respectful, yeah. you know, I'm not going to interact with them. Yeah. They're on their break. I'm intruding their space. It is a small theater, I will say.
Yeah,
sure.
Which worked perfectly for this type of show.
100.
I'm intrigued to know how they, because I believe there was a tour or it was licensed out to other theaters. And I know my sister who lives in Florida saw it there.
Oh,
fun.
So, yeah. So I was just, I'm wondering, you know, how they're going to do this in other theaters. Because this is a good show to do for any theater. But I feel like it has to be in the round, right?
There's a space where you could probably just do it with fourth wall in front of you, but would it be as fun or immersive, interactive? Probably not. But I know that Mary and I have talked about, like, people are going to be delivering this at a 2 when they think they're a 7. And, like, that's sad.
Because, you know, when we, Steven and I, of course, are having the debate, like, what level of this, of professionalism does it take to be able to do this show? And I get very, not jaded, but, like, when you're doing a parody, I think, personally, you have to not only have a good handle on the source material, you should at least know where it comes from. And then you have to be able to parody it, but then also, like, still try to be... this is going to sound bad, but still try to be talented. Like, you still have to do your best with it, even though the material may be campy, it might be ridiculous. So, like, I said that this would not be very hard to do because of the parody thing. And then Steven, being the technical person, being the choreographer, was like, actually, this requires a lot of technical ability in dance, in music, in, like, costume changes, set changes. There are a lot of different elements that come together to actually make this very difficult. So people are going to think that they're doing it well when actually they're really not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was more so asking about, like, venues, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, would this... Do you see this working in a proscenium? Do you see this working?
I can see it working in a proscenium. Do I want to see it there? Probably not. I think this is a beautifully built black box theater show.
Right.
Fully. Like, that's probably where this should stay. Because I think it needs that malleability that the, you know, a straight proscenium-based theater won't afford. And that is right, something to think about potentially. And how do you integrate your audience and make them feel it too?
You need a more intimate setting. And yeah. I feel like the fact that it's props, basically, that they're bringing out to do things helps the show. Like, we get the cart, the ice cream cart, we get the diving board, we get the movable staircase. Mm-hmm. And it's and obviously, and you didn't really see this in the video, I think, but the set was all Easter eggs as well.
Sure.
For the show. Mm-hmm. Like, they decorated the fuck out of that theater.
Oh yeah. Like, this show is not lacking for Easter eggs, which is my main number one thing. If you're going to take something that's already in the world, you better give me what I'm expecting.
Especially
and when you don't deliver, like, you know, something this culturally phenomenon like this that people love and, like, are obsessed with, you have to deliver. So again, good on Jonathan, and you can tell he's passionate about it, and he took the beats and the things that people were expecting and needing, and he did it perfectly.
Do you think he's gonna do a rewrite when season 5 comes out?
Well, they're actually coming out with a Stranger Things in 2025, the musical.
No, that's the play. The play
just
that's
the
currently
play.
In
correct.
The play that's
yeah.
currently in London.
Yeah, they're bringing it to Broadway.
To the Broadway, which is the prequel to I believe it is authorized.
Yes,
it is an authorized prequel. This clearly unauthorized. But also, I think season 5 is supposed to be coming out next year at some point.
I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And see, isn't it always supposed to drop in, like, September? And so they're skipping a year?
Yeah. Well, I mean, also there was the pandemic and the strikes and all that.
But
so
are we not worried that these children are growing up?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Oh, yeah. That is the concern. That is the
concern. Of course that's a main concern.
Well, here's the thing, though. I'm going to refute what you just said, because season 4 came out in May, the first part, and then the second part came out in July.
Oh.
So maybe they're looking at, and the third season came out in July as well, because that one more so takes place in summer. So that's maybe... True. We're getting, like, a February release.
All right. Hey,
I know they're
filming it.
They've been filming it, or they filmed it already. So it's just a matter. Of time. And I'm into it. I wonder if he's gonna rewrite and throw in, like, a season 5 joke somewhere, just to keep current with it.
Just to keep it going. Absolutely. Yeah. And this show would lend itself to that.
Yeah, it could be something as simple as, like, another music cue, like Running Up That Hill, mm-hmm. in a way. You know, it's so, but is there anything else we want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
Ooh.
Not for me. I think I hit most of the fun things that I wanted to talk about.
I think so. I think one needs to really play up the fact that Barb's turn is it. It is it.
Yes. Yes. Oh, when I left that theater, I was so changed after seeing Barb's turn.
Like, I do not know how to convey via audio with my voice that this is life-changing stuff. Barb's turn, like, reinvigorated me as to why I love theater. And I'm like, oh, that is amazing. Good job.
Yes. Yes, because it's everything we wanted from season one of the show, because Barb, a character we all kind of loved in a way, gets murdered really fast in the season.
Gets murdered.
Set into the upside down and murdered in a horrific scene. And so to give her the beltiest belt of an 11 o'clock number.
Yeah.
Is everything, and it's hilarious, and it showcases talent, and it's just I didn't want to talk the whole episode on that, so I'm glad we did it.
I know, that was totally fine. Well, and then I found a quote that Jonathan Hoge had said when talking about, like, hey, someone had asked him in an interview, oh, what do you think the future of Stranger Things is going to hold? Do you think that there's ever actually going to be some justice for Barb? And he says, unfortunately, I don't think there ever will be. The closest thing we're ever going to see as far as justice is going to be in my show. And I was like, oh, I thought that was cute.
Shots fired.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
Let's do it.
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I want to start with flats because I really only have two.
I'm not going to lie.
I love it. Let's do it.
My first flat is for the audio quality in the film. They didn't calibrate it right for it, I feel like. And there are moments, and you can tell there are different days or different cameras being used throughout. I just wanted one consistent, and there was a lot of times, like, I watch everything with subtitles. There was a lot of times it was so quiet that I had to really rely on the subtitles, and I'm gonna blame the audio person on the film. I'm not gonna blame them in the theater.
Yeah. I mean, how do you separate that? Because it's not their fault, but
right. So that's my first flat. My second flat, I was biting my tongue when we were talking about references and everything. There's one 80s reference that I'm really hating these days, and it's the new Coke. It's so overdone.
Yeah, I know.
It is.
Like it was funny in Wedding Singer 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whenever that show came out. 20 years? Fuck. And it was funny then, and now we have all these other things, and it's like, okay, so we as a society, please stop.
Yeah.
I'm begging
please
you,
just stop.
Just stop. We get it. It was a huge failure at the time. We're done.
We are done with this now.
What's her name? She even says it in the show that we all have all these cases in the back that nobody wants to drink or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, okay. Okay.
But we've heard it.
we've heard this joke so many times. So, like,
yeah.
If anyone's listening and is writing something said in the 80s, please delete your new Coke reference. I do not want to hear it. Thank you.
I love you.
Steven, what were your flats?
Oh man. Well, I think we sort of touched on it. This is a parody, yes, but a flat is, I think it is relying on not being able to dig its own story and instead rely on mimicking what's already been done through other musicals. And I would have loved it to stay in this world of, like, you know, making these fun 80s puns and references, and then instead of relying heavily on these other musical things. Is it wrong? No. Do I love it as a musical lover? Absolutely. But I'm just
so
saying.
So you just want to tip the scales and
I need
more
to
balanced.
Tip the scales a little bit more. Exactly.
Where you're like, okay, you're a little heavy on the musical references, but let's make a little more 80s.
I would venture to say it's a flat because the people who are going to come see the show aren't musical lovers and they're not going to get these funny references. So
unless they are.
unless they are. Because, I mean, it's for both, but I think you would draw more people in without, like, wait, I'm out of the joke.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, even though it did toe a really good line of not going over the edge, there were moments that it's flat for me on being a little inside jokey, where I could tell that the actors, like, found something funny in rehearsal and kept it, and I'm like, God damn it. But overall,
are you talking about in the adventure song when there's the three people who were trees and they would like do shit
some
with
that,
like that
entire adventure song felt like one big inside joke at some points, and I'm like, okay, you know what, however, I was also going, this feels like they're all in, you know, eighth grade freshmen, like they're within this age range, this is what they would be doing.
Oh, come on, using the bike handles as a shovel and making it a dick punching joke.
Dick
come
punch
on.
Joke. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but yeah, overall, like, flats are, it, like, it's, I would say sometimes the slow songs got real slow and dragging, so that's a flat for me, because I will equate it to, you can't have five energy drinks one day and then be given one the next day and think that that's going to satiate you, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. And then, like,
you,
if we're going to stay at the 11, we're going to stay at the 11 and let's just do it.
Okay.
And so, but yeah, those would be my big flats, I would say.
All right. Mary?
So we kind of talked about a few of my flats. I'm pulling up as I was watching this, I was like messaging Steven going, okay. And of course I used terms sharp and flat, knowing that we were going to be talking about this show.
I'm so just proud, like, of you.
Just like so Diana-sance.
Diana-sance.
It's still such a beautiful thing. So one flat that we'd already talked about was for me, it felt like the music was very much kind of one note, so it was really hard for me to, like, pick out standout songs.
Except for Barb's turn.
That was literally, I would play Barb in a New York minute. I would love to play her. Like, that, oh my God, it was beautiful.
Let's make it happen.
Let's manifest it.
Start working on your belt now.
Yes. Yes, sir. I'm on it. One flat for me, this is strictly because I love the relationship between Hopper and Eleven in the show. So to not have that in the musical made me kind of sad, because it was like at the very end, Hopper's like, oh, well, this is my first time meeting her. So, I mean, I guess I'll do a thing. So it did kind of make me a little sad, because, like, Hopper is the patriarchal figure of this kind of group of ragtag, like, children. Because, like, yeah, they all have parents, but, like, Hopper is the one that, like, he's the sheriff in a one-horse town, right? He's the guy that everybody knows, and he's, nothing happens in Hawkins, and then, like, all of the shit starts happening. So he's like, all right, well, somebody's got to take charge. I guess I'm going to do it. And then on the other side of this, you have Joyce as, like, the matriarchal figure who is losing her fucking mind all the time. It's just, it's bananas to me, these two. But, so I was very sad about that we didn't get more of a relationship, because they spend four seasons building this between all of them. So to not have that was sad for me, but I think there are just sometimes things that you have to cut if you're doing a parody. Like, how are you going to condense four seasons into 2 hours?
Of course.
So something has to go. So that was a flat for me. I didn't necessarily like the there are no queers in Hawkins. So then that gay joke and then the fisting joke with the puppet was kind of like,
Right, but then Act Two starts out with Maya Hawke's character and she's a lesbian. So
right. And fair. So I'm just like, I don't. But those were kind of like my big, like, flats. I mean, otherwise, yeah. The thing that Steven and I talk about, which, of course, I mean, the three of us, I'm sure, have talked about at some point. When you watch a parody, you are giving it a lot of passes that you probably wouldn't give other material, because 100%. You know it's making fun of itself. So, like, am I being very, like, nitpicky about this? Absolutely, because I wanted to have at least a couple of flats to talk about. But, I mean, overall, like, it's a fun romp. Like, absolutely. Would I show this to people who are theater buffs or like Stranger Things? Just like I would show a Harry Potter musical to my Potterheads? Absolutely, I would. You betcha.
Okay. So, sharps. I first sharped the... design of the show. I love this style of theater where it's made to look cheap, but it's not cheap.
Yes, absolutely.
So like everything about this, not just costumes, not just props, all of it, like Will, there's what, three puppets of Will or two puppets of Will, and it's so detailed. The animals in the Upside Down is amazing. The Demigorgon like is simple in a way because it's really a padded bodysuit and a face mask and jazz shoes, but like,
but it's effective.
There's also a lot of work put into it. So sharp number one.
Absolutely.
Sharp number two, for the cast. They cast people who do kind of look like the ones in the show.
There are moments I was like, did they get them to come in?
Even live, seeing Jeremiah Garcia in his Dustin wig, I was just like, Gaten?
He was muggin' real good.
And he kept the lisp going throughout. Everyone is belting their faces off. So credit where credit's due to these very talented actors.
Absolutely. Bravo.
I know you, Steven, are gonna fight me on this, but I will sharp the choreography because it's just it's so stupid, but also so like makes sense for the show, for the this show.
No. Choreography is one of my sharps. So
okay,
you're
great.
Good.
Okay, great. But we went on that whole time. Well, we went on the tirade
just
about the final
end.
Battle. Yes,
that's fine. But just because it's not something I would do doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just different.
Yeah, it's just different. It's just different opinions. Yeah. I want to sharp Jonathan Hoag while I'm at it.
Yes.
Like he did a very big task that I don't know who tasked him to do this or if it was a dare or something or if it's just a passion project of his, but I'm looking forward to future projects of his. I saw his credit on the Stranger Things website and he wrote two other shows that they listed. One's called Camp Nightmare and the other one's called The Nations. Never heard of them. I might look into them. I don't know.
I'm now very interested in his other work. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering if he's just a parody writer or if he's...
Yeah, he is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. I love that.
Welcome to my show and what we do.
I also want to sharp that Will is a puppet. And I'm sharping the Demigorgon just because, like, it's so funny. Him do the knockoff Thriller dance. Like... It's again, and how are they not? And how are they not getting sued?
How are they not getting sued?
And then I want to sharp the following performances: Crazy and Barb's turn for
both
everything. Amazing. Yes, Steven, continuing on. What's your
sharps? Oh man! Well, I will echo your sentiments about the choreography. Major sharp there. Again, Ashley Marinelli. Perfection. The not only is just like the numbers themselves choreographed to shit, it's like the scenes and the beats and everything in between, the scene changes and how everything is so stylized and perfect, and you know that not only does the director need assistance with that in their choreographer, but they have to play double duty in that. So I love that, and as someone who has done parody shows like Evil Dead and choreographed those things, I understand how hard shows like this are. So the level of thought that has to go into each thing, I was like gushing, like wishing I could be part of this cast because I'm like, oh, that would be so fun to be on this level. And so that's a major sharp for me, even though like maybe I don't like the end. That's okay.
But that's your viewpoint of the video of this. If you saw it live, maybe
It might be different. It could very well be different.
Yeah.
Had I been there in the flesh.
But then also I proposed that question to you as if you were the one doing it. So obviously you're like, okay, now I'm in my mindset and how I'm thinking of the staging of this is going to be totally different.
Yeah.
So
I again, I echo Justice for Barb. Absolutely a sharp. Another sharp are these performers' conviction and the fact that this story was actually fun and insane and unwatchably watchable all at the same time. I love Breakfast Club reference, Chef's Kiss, major sharp, so good. Major sharp how all of these characters are characters of people that they all live in perfectly. I want to shout out a line as a sharp, Steve Harrington, and Barb goes, oh, he's really a V, meaning Steve with a V, not Steven with a PH, and as a V Steven, I fully identify. So,
oh my god,
that's cute. That's a niche thing that probably only Stevens would laugh at, and so I have to point that out. I don't know, like, little moments of, like, in Friends Forever, I saw a bend and snap moment, and I just lost it, and It was perfect. So, yeah, all these little fun musical moments that ultimately can be a flat, but it's also a major sharp. So, just the eye sharp, the style of this show.
Yeah. Mary?
Oh, man. I mean, what hasn't already been covered? I think I mentioned it earlier, but one of the major sharps for me was the love that you could see among the cast for mm-hmm. this material. The fact that they, like, doing parody is very hard because, like, as an actor, I understand that being silly is going to be one of the things that I'm going to be asked to do in my career, but to wholeheartedly, like, put yourself in a world and make it real, but then also be ridiculous is a level of talent that, like, is really hard to quantify. So I think to see all of these performers and, you know, cast and crew both, creatives, everyone, like, be able to really kind of pay great respect to a series that is beloved by a lot of people and still be able to poke fun at the shortcomings of it, but in a loving way, I think was just a very cool sharp for me.
Like when they bring Eight in and she's like, we're doing a subplot.
Yeah,
an unnecessary right. subplot. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Yeah, it was just absolutely silly. I would say, I mean, another sharp for me were some of the lines in this show were just, okay, there's, what did I say? Oh, yeah, there's a moment where Lucas just goes, Lord, this bitch, I can't.
That's right. That's
and it's
right.
just like you're watching this and you go, okay, I've heard one of my friends say that to me just for no reason. So, like, that was, I mean, just beautiful. I mean, oh, God. I created a hashtag Ballet Brenner, because he's skipping all over the stage looking like Lucius Malfoy. I'm just like, no, okay. Hashtag Ballet Brenner. Very fun. I would say one final sharp for me would be, God, what hasn't been talked about? Even though sometimes this show does kind of go off the rails a little bit and, like, we're using the storyline, the through line of finding Will as the whole, like, plot, knowing that that's only in season one, I think that while it was still kind of chaos to add in the other seasons, it was still done and executed in a way that made the fans, it gave them good fan service. Because for a parody musical, you have to have good fan service. And I think that this group did a phenomenal job. Jonathan Hoag did an incredible job of giving us as fans the things that we needed and the things we were looking for in a parody musical. Because, like, when you walk into a show having known the source material, if I didn't see Eleven, if I didn't see Dr. Brenner, if I didn't see those things, I'd be like, what the fuck am I watching? This isn't even a thing. So, like, to be able to give us as fans that, those little, like, here's a nugget, so now I'm going to give you fuckery. Like, it's just perfect and so good. So, yeah, that's what I got for you.
Like, this is eventually what Starkid will do down the line.
Oh, yeah.
With their other parody musicals, like they will when they do, when they did Twisted, when they did The Trail to Oregon, it is fan service in a way, but also twisting it to be hilarious and funny.
Absolutely.
Would we add in the songs to our life's playlist?
I mean, can I say Barb's Turn? Like, is that just a cop out? Like,
no, I wrote that down as well as Crazy and the Adventure Song. Like,
honestly, I also kind of liked In These Woods. I kind of liked it, even though it's a Nancy and Jonathan moment. Like, that's, I don't fair. Know, the music's kind of like a thing. It's kind of a moment.
You know, I did myself a service and watched this twice. Nice grew on me the second time. It was very fun.
Cute.
It was very fun.
I wrote down straight men really should listen to this song.
Absolutely. I think that mood. That should just be on repeat. However, Welcome to Hawkins is sometimes the lovely land I like to put my mind in and just pretend that everything is fine and that the room is not burning all around me, you know?
I mean, I have listened to this cast album before, so
yeah,
but like the ones that I will play on repeat, definitely Barb's Turn, definitely Barb's Turn,
yeah,
definitely Crazy, because she is belting
so good.
And then one last question before we get to the end. Now, Mary, you've already answered this question, so
yes,
I'm going to focus this on to Steven.
Sounds
Steven, if you weren't the choreographer for this show, but you were cast in it,
yes,
which track would you like to play?
Oh Lord Jesus.
I rarely get to ask this question to people, and I forgot to do it during Legally Blonde, so we're doing
so
it now.
Interesting. This is an interesting one. So I always get pegged as quirky sidekick,
but it doesn't matter who. You have first pick of anybody.
No, I know, but like, I like those that have great arcs, and those are generally sidekicks or villains. And I'm thinking, based on this, I'd probably want to be Joyce.
Yes!
You would slay!
And we're already gender bending, and as long as you have a wig in this show, I don't think it matters.
No. And it doesn't have to be a good wig either, according to the show.
I character play that the shit up. Like,
oh my god,
that's what
Steven,
I would do.
You would slay.
I would be Joyce.
I also love that they kind of took a page out of Avenue Q's book gave her like a Will wig and a hat, like a black jumpsuit. It was perfection.
Yes.
But on that note, everyone. Oh, we're done with the episode. We did Stranger Things.
We did it.
And you know, initially I was a little like, what the fuck? Why is he making me watch this? But I was like, overall, I do think I enjoy the show.
I gave you two options.
You did.
So did. You picked this
was my own hell. But it was good. Because I think I like this. I feel like Kombucha Girl about this show. Like, I'm confused and I'm enamored. I'm pissed and I'm enthralled, you know? I'm losing brain cells, but I'm impressed. And like, it's
now,
fine.
Does it, because you saw the Broadway HD, are you now more intrigued to see it live?
Oh, I would probably need to go see this multiple times from different vantages just to like get the read on it. I would absolutely see this live. Very much so.
And Mary, you too. Like, you would see this live now?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I would see it live. I would see it one cocktail into the evening live. I would go in a little bit sauced all right.
Yeah, that's the vibe.
But see, that's also a theater thing. Like, I'm just an alcoholic by nature. So, hello. Here I am.
Do I want to use that as a quote, huh?
Yes.
So maybe I'll give you a different one. How about, I mean, that's just a theater thing. I just love, enjoying cocktails, and then I'm much more fun as an audience member when I've had at least one.
Great.
There
one
you
of
go.
Those, one of those may or may not be used. Who knows?
Delightful.
But Stephen and Mary, what do you have to plug or promote?
Oh, no. Well, our show.
Oh no!
Oh no! Well, our show.
Oh no! Well, our show. Yeah.
From the top, We take a musical each couple of weeks and take it from its literal top, from its origin story, and then we dissect it and figure out what makes it tick and what makes it relevant in today's world.
And our season this season is we try to take a theme each season, and we are doing Outcasts for season three. So you can find it wherever you stream your podcasts, and you can also follow us on Instagram at @from_the_top_podcast.
Ooh, we also maybe have a little spin-off show coming called
Will It Musical.
What?
Yes. Okay.
I need to hear that this after we're done recording.
So yeah, follow us for all the salacious deets and maybe if you want some ideas on musical fodder.
And if you have suggestions on things that you want us to do, you can email us at podcastfromthetop@gmail.com.
Or @from_the_top_podcast on Instagram.
Be sure, everyone, to listen to more in-depth conversation between Mary and Steven about Stranger Things on their podcast. It's been out for ages at this point.
Oh, ages.
ages. So be sure to check it out. And if you have, I don't know, if you really wanted us to talk about a musical reference and you're upset that I didn't mention it, well, Here are the socials that you could reach out and yell at me. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. Us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. Do you know where we can watch any of Jonathan Hoag's other works? Please let us know.
I don't even
Please,
know that. I would love
somebody
to know.
Tell me.
Steven does the deep dive, but I guess, you know, he hasn't deep dived enough on Jonathan Hoag.
I did
yet.
Not dive that deep on that one.
Steven, you
not
fell
yet,
down.
So sorry. Anyway.
Not yet.
And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we're sticking with live theater, film theater, and we'll be talking about The Toxic Avenger, the musical.
Shut the hell up.
John,
we
what
love
a good
that
show.
And this show is like Toxic Avenger meets a Harry Potter musical.
Yeah. Oh,
it's so good. Yes. What a show.
Stephen and Mary, thank you so much for coming back
thank
on.
Thank you, John.
Such
we
a
love
delight
you.
Having you. We need to have you come back more. Besides
Please.
Doing Star Kid and other and things.
We need to do like Jekyll and Hyde. Something highbrow.
Shut up.
Okay. Between the three of us, we could scour our internets and Broadway HD and everything
Let's
else and figure something out.
Okay.
And everyone, thank you for listening and bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.